Today's daf in Masechet Erevin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Chof Beit. And we are holding at the bottom, we were learning all of the beautiful drushes about the nature of Torah Shebaal Peh, the information that's contained in the potential of Torah Shebaal Peh. And we had actually spoken about Rabbi Akiva, but we didn't get down to that last drusha. The last drusha, of course, was the drusha that Rabbi Akiva himself was actually Mekayim in his life, for the way that he learned Torah. But we had spoken about the Inyanim of the Gezeiros and how it is that Shlomo HaMelech changed our entire nature of the way that we relate to Torah. And specifically, it all began with the very things that we're discussing here, particularly in terms of Erevin and in terms of Netilat Yadayim, which was the story of Rabbi Akiva yesterday. So we're up to the last two lines on Amud Beis, Chofalav Amud Beis. And we darshan the rest of the pasuk. We're talking about Kvutzotav Tartalim Shecharot Ke'orev. Omer Rav Chisda, what does Kvutzotav Tartalim mean? Well, it's a play on words. Kvutzotav is kotsim, and the Tartalim is tilim. So, Balamet Sheyesh Lidrosh Shal Kol Kots VeKots Tilei Tilim Shel Halachot. This is exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu that Rabbi Akiva is going to be doing in the future when Moshe Rabbeinu saw him when he came up to be Mekabel Torah on Har Sinai, that there's going to be an immense amount of new material that is Nidrash from Rabbi Akiva on every single one of those little kotsim, which are the kitre otiot, piles and piles of halachas. What's the closing shechorot ko'orev, black as a raven? This comes from Bimiyata Motz'an. Where do you get this type of ability to understand the Pididoresh? Someone who is shachar ve'orev, meaning Mashkim Umariv. He's there for Shachris early in the morning. He's there at night. Lebet HaMidrash. Rabba Omer. No, it's like, literally like an Orev. Somebody who makes himself black by basically losing his whole countenance because he's so tired and exhausted learning over the Divrei Torah that he looks like he's exhausted himself like an Orev. Rav Amar, it means to be achzari like an orev. An orev is, according to the Medrash, doesn't bother bringing food for its children. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mazmin them, insects that they're able to eat, that grow in their own excrement. So it's b'mishu meisim atzmo achzari al banav al b'nei beto ke orev, and he treats his family without rachamim. Ki hod rav ada bar matna havekazel veirav. He was going to learn in Bavel, to the Beis HaMedrash, Amrali Devitu. So his wife is screaming at him, what am I supposed to feed your children, you know? So he says to her, Mishlimi, Kurmi Ba'agma, what, there's not enough berries growing out there in the swamps. You can't pick berries for them. There's no food, or maybe it means quinoa. Rashi says, maybe some type of vegetation that you're able to grind up and turn it into a grain-like thing. Plenty of healthy things out there, you know. So they don't have ice cream cones. What can you do? You know, they got to learn. Their father is going out to learn. My Rebbe, Reb Chaim, used to speak about this all the time around Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, because there were people in the Kollel and Mir that used to act like this. And he said, I just have one question. He said this in Yiddish, obviously. Is this what you would have said to her as you were going down to the chuppah? That's the question. If not, then you have no right to do it. All right. Anyway, so Mishalim going on. Mishalim lesonav al panav lahavido. Omre bishom alevi l'molim mikra katuv v'yavshal omro. Because when we say Mishalim al panav, it means el panav, meaning of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Meaning that HaKadosh Baruch Hu just can't wait to get rid of these people. I just want to get over this. Let this guy get out of here. What do I owe him? What do I owe him for all the mitzvahs that he did? Let's give him whatever he needs. Get him out. And he throws it off of himself. He's not ma'acher. Because that we know, that the schar for tzadikim is blasid lavei. It's only lesonav that he'll pay back in Olam Hazeh, Anu Dam Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi. Why does it say, Hashem Elohim Mitzavocha Hayom La'asotam, which we end Parshas Vetchanan with that, Hayom La'asotam V'lo L'machar La'asotam. After death, it's too late to do any mitzvahs. And Hayom La'asotam and L'machar L'kabos Charam. This world is meant for doing things, not for enjoying them. Only in Olam Haba is there a place for Schar. Om Rabbi Chaga Vitem Reb Shubu Bar Nachmini. May Dichtiv Erech HaPayim. Now note that this is all in Midot HaRachamim. And Erech HaPayim, why does it say Erech HaPayim if you say Erech Av? Well, because Erech HaPayim means both faces, right? There's two different faces. There's an Erech HaPayim for Tzadikim, meaning delaying showing the faces of happiness to the tzaddikim, because for that you're going to have to wait till Olam Haba. And he's Erech HaPayim Rishayim as well, not showing anger to Rishayim, because this way he could push off their punishment until Olam Haba, but meanwhile it gives them time to do teshuva. So it's also a midah of rachamim. Rabbi Yehuda Omer getting next to the Mishnah. Okay, so now we're going to get back to our Mishnah of the special din of Pasim. So remember that according to Rabbi Yehuda, we were limited to a maximum size of Beit Satayim because of the fact that he considers this to be similar to the general idea of not being hukaf ladira or to have a low-quality mechitza. So we talked about mechitzot ru'uot or diuri ru'ua, meaning that it's not the type of home that is meant to be used in normal circumstances. In either of those two cases, we had a special halacha that we limit the overall area in which tiltul is mutter, and we give it a din of reshut hayachid to the size of the chatzar hamishkan, which was 50 by 100, 5,000 square amot. Rabbi Yehuda insisted that here too it's 5,000 square amot, remember, and the issue was, is it similar? The way the Chachamim were saying, well, why is it any different than like a chutzar? I mean, people need this to live. They come in there for the water. Why would it be limited? There's no limitations on things like a chutzar. Rabbi Yehuda, you will recall, he distinguished between a chutzar, where you have a din of, one possibility is that you have real mechitzas in a chutzar. You're surrounded by real mechitzas, where over here you only have your diyumdim. But then we said, if according to Rabbi Yehuda, you'd be marich in the diyumdim, you would end up having a real mechitza because it would be oimed meruba ala porutz if it's Beit Satayim, because Beit Satayim is 70 amot by 70 amot plus on either side, which if the opening, according to Rabbi Yehuda, can only be 10 amot, why is it different than a chatzar? Becomes a very powerful question. We ended up saying because the din of pasei beraot allows you a gap that you wouldn't be allowed in a normal chatzar. So in any event, the question would be, the shear of Beit Sa'atayim that we are allowing you over here, does Rabbi Yehuda limit it to the entire area that's enclosed, or does Rabbi Yehuda mean to say that the bor can be Beit Sa'atayim? Now, the reason would be that if we say the bor is Beit Sa'atayim, then the individual recognizes that the heter of the usage is really for the bor. And the additional two amot that he has to have on every side, that's imposed on him as a din in being able to give his water to the animal without having to be chayshit. So Rabbanan said you have to add on, but he doesn't view this as being more than the normal Beit Satayim. So our question is, what did he mean? Did he mean the bor together with the pasim, the entire area has to be limited to Beit Satayim, or did he mean the bor itself can be a Beit Satayim, and then you're still allowed to go the two amot out? And the question is, psychologically, does a person measure the area he's using by the usable part, which over here is to him the bor? I mean, that's the whole idea. In which case, he views it the same as a normal karfaf of a Beit Satayim. Or do people actually focus on the mechitza? It's called Adam noten enav mechitzato, in which case we would be limited to the entire area being Beit Satayim, because otherwise he might end up confusing it with the din of a karfaf that can't be more than Beit Satayim because it's not really used for dira. So we have over here a braita that expands on the story in the Mishnah, because it begins like just like the Mishnah. Okay, how close can I get to the bor? That was the old story, Kedei Rosh HaVeruba of the Pora, which is two amas. How far away can you go? The Chachomim say, whatever, Kur, Kuraim. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it can't be more than Beit Satayim. And again, they ask him, so what's the difference between a deer, a muktzah, a sar, a chotzer? I mean, over there, you agree it could be Kur, Kuraim. And he said, the difference is that there it's a real mechitza, and over here it's pasim. So it's not really the same. Then we stopped for a moment. We got the shita over here, a new shita of Reb Shimon ben Elazar, Reb Shimon ben Elazar said an interesting thing. He said that the area has to be a square, which is Beit Satayim, Ab Beit Satayim, which is not accurate. What it means is the area required for a Beit Satayim by the same width. So width and length would be squared here. But what he means is the 70 plus Amot on either side. And they only allowed you to be Marchik an extra 2 Amot for the Rosh of Aruba, which explains that if what Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar is saying is that you can get all the way up to the bar of Beit Satayim or Beit Satayim, so then the only machlokas between him and Rabbi Yehuda would be that according to Rabbi Yehuda, it would be the entire area can only be Beit Satayim. Otherwise, they'd be saying the same thing. Says Gemara, no, they would not be saying the same thing. Because Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar was stressing that you need to have a square measurement of a Beit Satayim, whereas the difference would be if it's Arich V'Katin, suppose it's perpendicular. So it may be very thin and narrow, but long, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that would also be fine. The important thing is that it's not more than Beit Sa'az. You can't bring any Raya from here at all. Now, this following piece is an extremely important general klal, which really sums up the issues. Klal Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. There's two ways to talk about Rishus. A Rishus could be an Avir, which means an open place, does not have a roof. Or a Rishus could be a dira. A dira, technically speaking, would have a roof. So what Reb Shimon ben Elazar says, look, even an open space, that is to say there's no roof, if it was made, it was enclosed for purposes of diur, then it doesn't matter how big it is. So if you're talking about a deer for your animals, you're talking about a sahar, which is like a horse corral, a mukta, which was your backyard that you're using for storage, a chatzar, we know about, doesn't matter how big it is. It could be chameshes korin, aseres korin, the Tosfos says on a base, could be even an infinite number of korin, perhaps. We'll talk about that later. Then it's mutter. But even if it's a real dira, meaning it really has a roof, but its point is that the tashmish is for avir. That's the beauty of what he's saying. If the tashmish is for dira, then we ignore the avir. But if the tashmish is for avir, then we ignore the dira. So in other words, if the place is made, like the issue of the Borgenheim or things, where people are watchmen for the outdoors, they're only out here because they need a place to stay between the times that they walk around the field to make sure nobody's stealing and stuff like that. So they're watchmen or whatever. Then that is not considered to be a real home. And therefore, it would only be kosher up to Beit Satayim, yet to be Beit Satayim also. Now, that's the formulation that is fundamental in our understanding the shear over here. And therefore, the details, whether, according to Rabbi Yehuda, this is considered to be that type of issue or not, and the question of what type of mechitzas are considered to be ipso facto poor quality mechitzas, which reduce it into the idea of a type of thing which is avir, like, say, a machane, where you would be using only shesi or only erev. All of those discussions, the machlokas that we had before, are actually sub-issues of this general rule. And now we are ready for Richie's last day. Oh gosh, in Finland.
Yeah.
This is a sad day, and it's going
to
be.
Probably be here tomorrow morning because we're getting ready to depart. So we'll see.
Well, maybe we'll have one more day. You'll to be mishatifas. All right, Bezrat Hashem. So now we get to the question of the relationship of Rishus HaRabim, which we've started quite a while back, talking about the Chiddush of whether Rabim, the Bekiah of Rabim, can be Mevatel the Rishus or make it more difficult for us to call it a Rishus HaYochid. It really comes to an absolute climax in the question of how to relate to a Rishus HaRabim that would be going through Pasei Beiraot. But remember, the Iker Takona of Pasei Beiraot was basically to allow something on the road for people who are being Ola L'Regel. So what would be the din if the Rishus HaRabim actually goes right there and it's not even off to the side? According to Rabbi Yehuda, if the road goes straight through The Pase Beiraot, you have to turn it to the side. You have to build a bypass. Because otherwise, the Rabin will be Mavato the Mechitz. The Chachomim say that is not necessary. And remember that we spoke about this earlier, that this, said Rabbi Yochanan Belazar, this is a place where the Chachomim are teaching you the pure power of Mechitzot. That when it comes to the question of whether we view things in terms of the usage by people, or whether the fundamental determinant of Rishus is the way in which it is spatially defined, here the Chachamim are explaining to you, ignore the use, ignore the fact that there's 10,000 taxicabs beeping, going through your Pase Beiraot. They don't even appear. All that appears is the Mechitza in terms of your understanding of space. Wait, I mean, that seems to be saying that Rabbi Yochanan likes that, right? I mean, he's saying this is Khan Visvirale. I mean, does he like it? Don't we have that famous issue where we said before, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that Yerushalayim, if it wouldn't be for the fact that the doors are closed at night, it would have a din of Rosh Hashanah. How the heck could Yerushalayim have a din of Rosh Hashanah if it's surrounded by walls? I mean, even if, forget about the doors. So I don't close the doors. Who cares? I mean, certainly you can't say that if you're going to tell me on the one hand that you agree that Koyach Shal Mechitzes, you're talking about these little tiny things, right? I mean, Yerushalayim, you got these big gigantic walls. So on the one hand, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, well, look at this, the Chachamim say we got these little diyumdim, that's enough to stop all of the traffic, and it's not considered to be a Rosh Hashanah. It's absurd to talk about Yerushalayim as with all of its walls, but because people are coming through it, if you wouldn't close the doors, it would have a din of Rosh Hashanah. I mean, there's no possible way that Rabbi Yochanan can make both of those statements. So obviously, Rabbi Yochanan does not agree. He's saying, yes, the Chachamim said this, I don't agree, but what it teaches you is that according to the Chachamim, all we look at is the Mechitzah. I personally agree with Rabbi Yehuda. So I feel that if you have Rishus HaRabim in terms of traffic going through the Rishus, it's going to be Mavato the Mechitzas, just like Rabbi Yehuda said in the Mishnah. Now, this leads us to some very serious issues, which it's time for us to look straight in the eye. Now, you remember that earlier, Rabbi Yehuda was the one who said that if you've got two houses on either side of Rishus HaRabim, I mean, come on, guys. Two houses on either side of Rishus HaRabim. You've got 10,000 taxicabs honking between your two homes. All you need to do is you put a lechi on one side of the house on one side and a lechi on the other side of that same house, and then you can carry across the street. That's exactly what the Rabbanan say over here. Ignore the traffic, right? And the Rabbanan over there, they say to Rabbi Yehuda, what do you mean? It's Rosh Hashanah. Look at all this traffic. You can't be Ma'ariv Rosh Hashanah. What's the matter with you? How can you carry across Rosh Hashanah? That's a complete inversion of the two shitas, right? That's crazy. So basically, what we're going to need to face up to is that there's a hierarchy of the Gidorim of Mechitzas. Because basically, there may be a technicality of the concept called mechitza, but look at how many different forms the mechitza takes. We're already used to the idea of a mechitza geruah, so that the mechitza geruah would be places where we need to virtualize certain elements of it, or we need to essentially virtualize, in a way, the diurim of it. But it's not fully present. So let's say it only has horizontal lines, or it only has vertical lines. That's not the same level of mechitza, even though technically it's a mechitza. So let me introduce some other possibilities. When you're talking about Pase Beiraot, where you've got this really optical illusion mechitza, because the area is enclosed by four little gammas on each side, one on each side, right? I mean, yes, that's a very powerful mechitza in terms of its defining all four sides. Is it as powerful as a wall? I mean, obviously not. But is it as powerful as a wall on two sides? Well, maybe it's more powerful. But I mean, this we need to consider. The distance that is covered by the mechitza, the sides that are covered by the mechitza, the relationship of the airspace to the covered space of the mechitza, the question of whether something is a pirza or a delet, the issue in all of the above, whether it's a natural occurring or whether it's an actual built mechitza, which may have massive implications, the awareness that people have of the existence of the mechitza, because, I mean, look, as the Gemara is about to talk about, why isn't the continental shelf a mechitza? And if the continental shelf is a mechitza, then basically the world is Rishus HaYachid. And then there'd be no such thing as Rishus HaRabim at all. So how do you explain that? Now, there's different issues that we need to take into consideration there, one of which Tosfos introduces, is the validity of a natural mechitza in terms of the hierarchy. It's certainly valid, but in terms of the hierarchy of mechitzas, where does it fit in if it's natural versus man-made? Because obviously a mechitza man-made has a far greater level of conscious space that's associated with it than just the fact that there happens to be a hole in the ground, and certainly just the fact that there happens to be a continental shelf. How about the need for the awareness that you're standing in a mechitza? I mean, if you're standing in the great prairie, it's a little bit hard for you to realize that you're in a Rishus HaYachid because of the continental shelf of the Pacific that you're dreaming of and the Atlantic that you came from, right? So, I mean, would that be a necessary component of a mechitza? So all of these we know are components. The question is, in a hierarchy of mechitza, where do they fit? And it's clear as well that that hierarchy may not be something that everyone agrees upon. Now, once you take all of these kind of issues into consideration and the impact that they would have on the Rishus HaRabim that would be coming through it, the interrelationship of the diurim to the mechitza, the size of the area that is there, which is the difference between the Beit Satayim and the maximal size, then there's other things you need to consider. For instance, the idea of a Rishus HaRabim being defined by the situation in the Midbar, which we call Diglei Midbar. How similar to the Diglei Midbar does it have to be? Might it be that something that may not be a mechitza, let's take the case of a wall on either side of the Rishus HaRabim. It may not turn it into Rishus HaYachid, but it may prevent it from being a Rishus HaRabim. Because remember, this is not a binary game. We do have the issue of a Mokum Ptur, which the Rabbanan complicated by turning into, in certain cases, a Karmelit. But the idea is that just because something is not similar to Diglei Midbar, which means you would be Potter if you threw into it from Rishus HaYachid, does not automatically mean that it's Rishus HaYachid. That also has to be taken into consideration. How about the question of ease of use? Remember, we spoke about that back in the second Shabbat. How about if there's a puddle there? You're going to get dirty if you walk through it. Does that destroy its din of Rishus HaRabim because people are hesitant to walk through it? How about ownership? Could ownership be a factor in Rishus HaRabim and Rishus HaYachid? In other words, the fact is that people have been cutting through this area. If I decided that I want to put up a gate, nobody could stop me from putting up a gate because it's mine. So then would that by definition mean you can't call it Rishus HaRabim if at any point we could be mafsik the Bekias HaRabim? Every single one of these issues are issues that are raised here and that need to be taken into consideration. So you can understand now that what appears to be an incredible contradiction between the Rabbanan and the Rabbanan and between Rebbe Yehuda and Rebbe Yehuda may not be a contradiction at all, because what you're asking on Rebbe Yehuda is, why does he say that two whole walls, a house on one side and a house on the other side, that prevents the area from being a Rishus HaRabim and therefore you can make it an Eruv? Why is that necessarily a contradiction to a Rabim driving through Pasei Beirot, which are barely visible and are not walls at all? Maybe over there, Rebbe Yehuda indeed agrees that the Rabim can be Mevatel the Mechitza. That's not much of a question. Or you could look at it in the other way. According to the Rabbanan, who say, driving through the four Mechitzas which surround you on every single side, where? Right there. See that little Amma over there, Okay, so you're surrounded on all four sides. The fact that the taxi cabs are honking should be completely ignored. You're in the middle of a mechitza. Does not mean that they would hold it, even if there's two whole walls, but there's also two walls that don't exist at all. How do you know that the Pase Beirot are not more of a mechitza than the two walls, according to the Rabbanan? So it's all very nice to talk about this as being a contradiction. Is it really a contradiction? And there's one additional thing that we need to take into consideration, and that is the virtual mechitza of the Tzuras HaPesach. Now, that turns out to be one of the most important issues in terms of the practical dinim of Eruv. Is a Tzuras HaPesach a true mechitza or not? Now, that it's raised right here in terms of the Yerushalayim issue, because Yerushalayim certainly had Tzuras HaPesach, and the openings were openings that were actually ptachim. And therefore, why in the world are we saying that Yerushalayim would have been a Rishus HaRabim if it wouldn't have had doors? What's wrong with the Tzuras HaPesach that it would have prevented it from ever being considered a Rishus HaRabim? The mashmaut is that if Rabim break through at Tzuras HaPesach, so to speak, that then indeed the Tzuras HaPesach ceases to be the equivalent of a full wall. Now, this has everything to do with the question of how to make Erevin in big cities. Can you make a Tzuras HaPesach over Fifth Avenue? Now, it turns out that that's a major machlokas Rishonim. Most of the Rishonim, like the Rosh and the Rif, they paskin that from this Gemara, basically, that the Tzuras HaPesach would not be considered, based on Rabbi Yochanan's Psak, would not be considered a mechitza if Baki Bo Rabim. The Rambam disagrees. The Rambam says that Tzuras HaPesach is a 100% mechitza. Of course, on the other hand, the Rambam makes a chumrah because he doesn't require 1,000 taxicabs beeping. According to him, Rishus HaRabim is defined not by its usage, but rather by the fact that it's 16 amas wide and is public. Okay, in any event, you can see that the number of variables are enormous when it comes to the concept of Erevin. So we open up gently by pointing out what appears to be a contradiction in Reb Yehuda and a contradiction in the Rabbanan from that famous case of the two homes on either side of the Rishus HaRabim. So does it make sense that over there, Reb Yehuda says, ignore the taxicabs, and over here where you got all this little tiny little thing, we only have two mechitzas. He says, ignore the taxicabs. Over here, you have four mechitzas. He says that you can't ignore the taxicabs. And the Rabbanan would say just the opposite. And of course, the answer that the Gemara gives is exactly what we just discussed. If you have two true mechitzas, and the wall of a home is a real mechitza, so over there, Rabbi Yehuda holds that that is a complete end to the Rishus HaRabim, because a true mechitza is mevatel Rishus HaRabim, and the traffic can't affect it. Mashenkin, over here, you don't have any real mechitzas. You only have your diyumdim. And we answer vice versa, that in the case of the diyumdim, you have four mechitzas. Now, indeed, these mechitzas are sort of invisible, but nominally, they're walls, real walls, all four sides. In the other case, you only have two walls. So again, we have now a different hierarchy of what to look at between the Rabban and Rabbi Yehuda. So yes, it's no stira, but it's essential for us to look at it closely so that we can get the different sense of the hierarchy according to the Rabbanan and according to Rabbi Yehuda. We've already started with some of that with the understanding that Aliba de Rabbi Yehuda, we're only going to be allowing you a Beit Satayim, whereas according to the Rabbanan, we're treating these as real mechitzas. This is very consistent to the hierarchy that we've already seen in the difference between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan, correct? Okay. Then we've got Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef quoting Rabbi Yochanan to say, there's no such thing as a Rishus HaRabim in Eretz Yisrael. What? Now this is like, how is that possible? So Rav Dimi said that over, and Abaya said to Rav Dimi, can you explain that, please? How is Eretz Yisrael different than anywhere else on earth? I mean, I'm assuming that the reason you say that there is no Rishus HaRabim in Eretz Yisrael is because of the fact that the sea wall around Eretz Yisrael, starting on Sulma de Tzur, which is basically the area of Rosh HaNikra north, that whole area, look how steep it is. And the fact is that as you go down Eretz Yisrael, you still have certainly a raised area of at least 10 tvachim, if not 1,000 tvachim, over the sea, all along the side along the sea. If you look at the other side around Gader, it's incredibly steep. Anybody who's taken the trip from above the Golan going down to Hamat Gader, which it's like a roller coaster, and that is continues all along basically the valley, you always have 10 tvachim. In which case, you are saying that the whole Eretz Yisrael is surrounded by mechitzas on two sides. And therefore, because it's got mechitzas on two sides, it's no longer similar to the Diglei Midbar. And because of that, it's not going to be a Rishus HaRabim. I mean, if that's what he meant, Rabbi Yochanan, when he said that, you can say the same thing about Bavel. I mean, Bavel's got the Euphrates on one side. It's got the Diglas, the Tigris on the other side, which also have a seawall of 10 tvachim. Why is Bavel a Rishus HaRabim? As a matter of fact, the entire planet is surrounded by an ocean where there's continental shelving, says the Gemara, and therefore there's no place in the world that could ever be a Rishus HaRabim, according to you. That's brilliant. Okay, so we've just thrown out the Arbor Rishus Shabbos. Ah, come on. I mean, that can't be it. Okay. Why, in fact, is it not it? As all the Rishonim ask. Okay, why is it not it? So Tosfos says, well, it's not it because it's a natural mechitza, and in the hierarchy of mechitzas, natural mechitzas are not enough to prevent the inyanim of Baki Beirabim. And therefore, the Baki Beirabim would restore the status of the Rishus HaRabim to the area surrounded by the continental shelf because nobody made it. Other approaches that I mentioned to you earlier, the questions of the people's awareness when you're on the continent that you're surrounded by a mechitza. What exactly the shear is to that, of that level of awareness? Where would we allow, because this is a major issue in big coastal cities, of using the continental shelf for the actual mechitza of the Erev? That it's extremely important. I mean, in many cities in Eretz Yisrael, the Erev goes up until the Sulma Detzur, so to speak, the extension of Sulma Detzur, where you've got this massive drop. We have to go down all those stairs to get down to the Yam. The top part is the area that provides the wall. So how far away can that be? How much awareness does that have to be? No clarity about these issues. Anyway, so maybe, says Abaya, the real issue over here is the ease of use issue. Maybe that's the point. So that since all that Rabbi Yochanan meant is that since you've got a lot of San Francisco in Eretz Yisrael, I mean, you can look at many places. You've got to like go all up and down. It's very hard if you're not equipped with a car, very hard to make those walks, you know. So you can't call that just a rabbi. I mean, in the Midbar, you know, the Midbar, you had the Onan, made everything great, smooth, no climbing. So maybe that's what he meant. And since it's not ease of use, you can't call it Rishus HaRabim because it's not considered to be a area that is similar to the Diglei Midbar. Maybe that's the point. Omar Lay, Sir Avdimi says to Abaya, man, brainy one. Karkafta means the guy with the big brain. Brainy one. I tell you, Chazite L'Reshech Be'amudei, Ki Amra Rabbi Yochanan Hashmaitza. I was standing there when Rabbi Yochanan said this over. This was before you were born, of course. But I saw your hologram right up there because he actually said word for word what you said. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos learns, I saw your Rebbe, Reshech, which was Rabba. Rabba was actually there. And no wonder this is the way you look at it because you're basically a continuation of that mimer. Okay. And in fact, when Ravin comes along, he quotes Rabbi Yochanan as saying that it's the areas that are the ups and downs, the San Francisco areas, the Malot and Moradot, they're in Chayav Elam B'Shum Rishus HaRabim. Why? They're not similar to the Diglei Midbar. We're assuming, now it turns out this is an assumption, but we're assuming that that is an ease of use issue. So the question that Rechava asked of Rav, I mean, if you're talking about ease of use, okay, what about the classic Tel Hamitlaket Asra Mitoch Arba? Remember, there's the question of the relationship of the slope to the length, 4 amot of length, where the slope brings you all the way up 10 tefachim, is considered to be a mechitza. But how about if people actually are climbing that? I mean, would that then be a Rishus HaRabim? Or is it because it is the mechitza? I mean, it can't be Rishus HaRabim. I mean, I understand according to the Rabbanan, there's nothing to discuss. I mean, the Rabbanan say, who cares if the Rabbim are walking? They say that even in an area like the Pasim. The Pasim, people just float through. They don't even notice they're going through the Pasim because those Pasim are almost invisible. So if they say that even over there, the Rabbanan are not going to allow the Rabbim to be Mevatel Mechitza, just look at Mechitza, Mechitza, Mechitza. Don't listen to taxi cab horns. Then here, Kol Shekein. I mean, over here, it's you know what it is to be able to climb these things. Of course they're not going to be able to be Mevatel. I'm asking you, the you old of Rebbe Yehuda, going a little bit of Rebbe Yehuda, okay, are you going to say that maybe Rebbe Yehuda, I mean, would you admit that maybe Rebbe Yehuda holds the only reason that Rishus HaRabim becomes dependent on the taxi cabs is because it's so easy for them to drive through Pafsei Beiraot? But I mean, over here, maybe indeed it's like the Ma'alot u'Mardot. Rabbi Yochanan said that those are never going to be considered to be Rishus HaRabim. Rabbi Yochanan held of Rebbe Yehuda. So, I mean, and maybe over here it's not convenient and therefore it's not a Rishus HaRabim, right? Wrong. Says Rava. It is a Rishus HaRabim. What? How about if it's snappling, okay? The only way that the Rabim get across this area is that there's ropes to snapple with, and if they're going to be able to get down to the bottom of the hill, everybody who comes along grabs a rope and snapples down. I mean, you're going to consider that to be Rishus HaRabim too? Yep, I am. What? Well, what about Meiron? The Ma'alot Beit Meiron, you know, where over there we say on Rosh Hashanah, of Rim Lefanav Kivneim Arom, there's no room for anybody except one person at a time. Is that a Rishus HaRabim? Yep. That's a Rishus HaRabim. So then, how do you explain the Brice about a Chotzer? It says a Chotzer, where you come in on one end and you go out on the other end, and the whole street is coming through, is called a Rishus HaRabim only for Tuma, but it's Rishus HaYochid for Shabbos. Now, just tell me. Are you going to tell me that Rebbe Yehuda would never have said that? Rebbe Yehuda agrees. The moment that the Rabbim come through, it doesn't matter how inconvenient it is. And you're going to tell me that what? This is according to the Rabbanan? I need a brisa like this, the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan say that even in an area like the Pasim, it's considered to be Rishus HaYochid, where they just drive straight through and don't even notice the Pasim. And you're telling me that over here, where you can barely get through because there's you got to get through the opening into the chutzner, and there's also rocks at the bottom, and that doesn't matter. That is considered to be an area that it would be obviously not. I know, according to the Rabbanan, that this is not an area that the Rishus HaRabim can be bevato. It's only Nogea Rebbe Yehuda, so it's saying Alibi Rebbe Yehuda. You're wrong, and you don't need you need ease of use for the Rabbim to be bevato like the Diyumdim. Not here. So, well, maybe not. Maybe there is no Kiddush, according to Rabbanan. I don't know. And maybe that the only Kiddush is the part about the Rishus HaRabim Latuma. Maybe that's the only point that I needed it for. The rest is obvious once I know the din. What about this halach? Okay, tell me what you're going to do with this. You've got mavois that end up in pits or in caves. Is considered to be Rishus HaYochid for Shabbos, even though they've got a Rishus HaRabim on either end and people pass between them. But it's still called Rishus HaRabim Latuma. So, first of all, what do you think it means? I mean, it doesn't mean the mavoi ends at the bottom of a hole. That's ridiculous. What it means is that at the door of the mavoi, there's a pit, right? And then there's a small area around either side where people are going to have to pick their way around it. It means it's very inconvenient to use it, right? So it says over there, Rishus HaYochid LaShabbos, Rishus HaRabim LaTuma. Again, you're going to tell me that this is necessary according to Rabbanan? I'm telling you it's got to be Rebbe Yehuda. And it's a Rishus HaYochid. Why is it a Rishus HaYochid? Because they have to pick their way around the edge. And that's not considered to be an ease of use, you see. Because it can't be the Rabbanan. I know it from the Rabbanan. It's obvious. I mean, they said even Pasei Beirot, where it's wide open, that it's considered to be ignore the taxi cabs. So here for sure. Well, maybe it's actually the same thing I told you before. You're right. There's no Chiddush. And the Chiddush is only teaching me the din of Legabe Tumah de Rabbanan. I mean, the Rishus Rabim of Tuma. But it is only a bit of Rabbanan. Now, the question is that Mishnah also talks about another type of area, which is called Shvile Beit Gilgul. And that had very, very steep kind of paths. And it says over there that type of area is Rishus HaYochid only for Shabbos and not Latuma. Now, what is Shvile Beit Gilgal? So, Amri Devei Reb Yanai, that is talking about a road that is so steep that if you've got a slave who is smuggling cocaine and the cops are after him, he can't run. It's too steep. And there's no way for him to run up the slopes no matter what. So he's unable to be yoru to the fast throughout the yard. He's coming before in front of the police guy. He can't run away. So tell me who's that's going according to. I mean, again, it can't be the Rabbanon. Obviously, according to him, that's not a Rishus Rabbi. Must be telling me, even a Libra Rabbi Yehuda. Comes along Rava and says there's a totally different way to understand all of these things. And that is, you made the assumption that all of my comments had to do with the issue of ease of use. Ease of use was never the issue. And the point over here of the Shvilei Beit Gilgul is not ease of use. It's ownership. That's the point. Ease of use was never an issue. And actually, Rabbi Yochanan, that you said all along that the Maalot and Mordot, maybe that's what he was talking about, the San Francisco, that was not because of ease of use. Wrong. I've agreed with Rabbi Yochanan the whole time. You think I was fighting with Rabbi Yochanan and he said the Maalot and Mordot are not considered to be original. And that's not the point. The reason that Maalot and Mordot are not considered to be, and only in Eretz Yisrael. I mean, why didn't you talk about San Francisco? Why did you talk about Maalot and Mordot of Eretz Yisrael? So let me tell you, man, there's another issue. Ownership. And that ownership issue had to do with Yoshua at the original time of giving out Eretz Yisrael. Yoshua was extremely concerned for the welfare of the society that would develop. And he was an Oy of Yisrael. So before giving out Eretz Yisrael, he also created a highway system that would not impinge on people's ownership. So there were highways that everybody recognized. These are highways. Don't start suing me that this is part of your rishus. It was built on my property. It's nobody's property. Fine. Then what he did was that there are places where you could not build in those days highways that are in between the mountains or going through mountains. So areas that were Necha Tashmisha, that was public. But any area that would not be Necha Tashmishte, he did not view as public, and he allowed people to utilize these roads, but he gave the Rishus to individuals. Since he gave the Rishus to individuals in Eretz Yisrael, over there even Rabbi Yehuda holds that a Bakei Barabim is irrelevant, because Bakei Barabim in an area that somebody can come in and put up a fence and stop you is not considered to be Rishus Rabim, even a Libet Rabbi Yehuda, as long as it has any of the identifying issues of Mechizas. So therefore, it turns out that there was a completely different point all along, and Rabbi Yochanan may well have been talking about ownership rather than ease of use. Rava is absolutely adamant that ease of use is not considered to be a factor of Doima Lamidbar. As we've seen, there's many issues about this Doima Lamidbar, question of whether it had a covering over it, which we learned out from the wagons. Remember, a covering is not considered to be Rishus HaRabim. If it's got the two walls on either sides, may not be considered to be Rishus HaRabim, even though it's not Rishus HaYachid. The question of whether it's easy to use may also be a question. The question of how many people actually travel there in a normal day may also be a question. All of these things are, remember, Nogela Halacha, about where it is that we can make Yitzhiras HaPesach in order to create an Erev.